Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and of course, a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman, and I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is on vacation. On today's program, we're going to hear about the Yes Men, specialists in identity correction. It's a repeat broadcast of an interview we brought to you on December 24th of last year, but it's a good one. Also, we're going to catch up a little bit of what's going on at the FCC and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Do stay tuned. The Federal Communications Commission decided not to address media ownership rules at its Thursday, July 14th meeting, despite Chairman Kevin Martin's hope that the commission would open a proceeding on the issue. The delay stems from disagreement between FCC Democrats and Republicans over how long the proceeding would last and how many public hearings will be held. Right now, there's an equal number of Democrats and Republicans on the commission because the seat, which was once held by Kevin Martin, who replaced Chairman Powell, former Chairman Powell, who left, has not yet been filled. Communications Daily reports that Chairman Martin suggested a 120-day comment cycle on media ownership rules, 5 public hearings, and $200,000 for independent studies of the issue. But Commissioners Jonathan Adelstein and Michael Copps said that wasn't enough. Copps told reporters after Thursday's meeting, quote, "It fell last time because lack of process. The courts didn't like it, Congress didn't like it, and the American people didn't like it. So we need to make sure that we have a process in place that's open, that the public can participate in, and that's transparent," end quote. Also on Thursday, July 14th, the Senate Appropriations Committee voted to restore more than $100 million the House wants to strip from 2006 funding for public television. The measure proposes restoring $4 million in fiscal 2008 advance funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, as well as providing $35 million in 2006 for CPB to pass on to rural TV stations needing help constructing digital television facilities, and a $40 million installment for the replacement of public television's aging satellite interconnection system. In addition, $25 million was approved for Ready to Learn, the CBS program for funding educational shows. The measure would also earmark $11 million for Ready to Teach. And in other CPB news, the term of embattled chairman Kenneth Tomlinson will end in September. This is his second term, and he cannot be reappointed. The Washington Post reports that Cheryl F. Halpern, who was appointed to the CPB board by President Bush 3 years ago, is the top candidate to replace Tomlinson. Halpern, a lawyer and real estate developer in New Jersey, is a close ally, though, of Tomlinson's, and is part of the 5-member Republican majority that controls the CPB board. Democrats hold 3 seats, one of which is vacant. Halpern's association with Tomlinson stretches back more than a decade to when both were on the board of the agency that oversees the federal government's international broadcasting services, such as Voice of America and Radio Free Europe. Halpern and her husband have been major financial supporters of Republican candidates for years. At one point during the 2004 elections, Mother Jones magazine ranked the Halperns among the nation's top 100 hard money donors. That's contributions made directly to candidates, not party organizations. And Mother Jones said they contributed a total of $81,800 to, among others, President Bush and Republican Senators Trent Lott of Mississippi, Sam Brownback of Kansas, Conrad Burns of Montana, and Christopher Bond of Missouri. The magazine said that 95% of the Halpern's contributions during that election cycle went to Republicans. And that's a bit of what's going on in our media environment, and you are listening to Media Geek. And now we're going to go on to an interview with the Yes Men, who came to some prominence late last year, 2004. When one of the Yes Men showed up on the BBC to speak for Dow Chemical to apologize for the Fajin gas disaster that happened in Bhopal, India, killing thousands when the gas leaked in that city. That was a Union Carbide plant, and now Dow Chemical is the owner of Union Carbide. And on the anniversary of that disaster, Dow apparently said sorry. But it really didn't. It was the Yes Men. Producer Drew Tirico brings out more from them.
How did the idea of the Yes Men begin? Well, it kind of came to us. We had set up a couple of fake websites that were meant to be satire, and people were coming to the sites and inviting us to attend conferences. One of the sites was called GATT.org, and GATT is the old initials of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were confusing it for the WTO in the early days. And we started receiving invitations, and we received an invitation to attend a conference from people who thought that we were the World Trade Organization. And at that point, we decided to come up with a name for what we were doing, and or a name for us, and we called ourselves the Yes Men, because our strategy was to go in and basically agree with whomever we were addressing until they embarrassed themselves by showing their true colors. So that was the idea. That's kind of the origin story. I wish there was some industrial accident or, you know, some kind of...
came from a meteor.
More mundane. Right. Yeah.
So do you feel like you guys sort of grew out of this notion that, like, the pop culture, like, 15 minutes of fame thing, or was it just a pure sort of activist tactic that you felt like you had to develop in order to get the word out there?
Okay, let's see. There's a couple things there. First of all, we're first and foremost activists. Our intention is to produce attention, I guess, for issues that we think are underrepresented in the media or that need more focus. So I guess that's the first part, is that we primarily see ourselves as activists, and secondarily we try to engage creatively in that activism, you know, and often that ends up being much more like art than anything else, or, you know, sometimes theater, sometimes, you know, writing. It just sort of depends. And as far as our relationship to the media goes, I mean, as far as mass media goes, we're, I would say, reluctant participants. We recognize that one of the only ways to speak, you know, at a volume where people can hear you today is by speaking through the mass media. It's the way that the majority of sort of news gets out there. And so, so you know, we've looked for creative ways to, we'll call it collaborating with journalists. I mean, obviously these entities in and of themselves don't have any particular desire to report on left-wing social causes, seeing especially that they're owned by only six corporations, you know, the U.S. media anyway, major media. But there's, I guess, weaknesses in the system that can be exploited, and many journalists, in fact, do want to report interesting stories and just can't find a way around their editors to do it.
Do you think that sort of ideologically you guys strive to create more heroes in the tradition of activists, or do you think you really are trying to destroy the notion of heroes by elevating yourselves, this sort of a couple of middle class guys, into this sort of, you know, little snippets of fame?
Well, I mean, the fame thing is definitely not our goal.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm not saying it is.
I mean, we found, though, that, I mean, obviously, sometimes for storytelling, people need to sort of identify the protagonist or identify with them. And so having more of a public persona has helped us for that. I mean, you look at somebody like Michael Moore, and, you know, the reason he's been able to achieve as much as he has and get to be so popular, in part, is because he's been a sort of a front man for his, you know, he's very present in what he does. I'll put it that way. You know, people identify with him. He's very congenial. So, you know, in regard to that, yeah, I mean, Michael Moore is kind of a contemporary hero, but there's others too, like Naomi Klein. You know, we like her books, and especially her writings on globalization, corporate globalization, which are really vital. Vandana Shiva, you know, working on GM food issues. And then, of course, there's many historical ones, too. I mean, we look at, in the not-so-distant past, you know, AIDS activists with groups like ACT UP, and a little bit further back, you know, people like the Black Panthers and the tactics that they used, you know, to get their messages out there. Other groups that work at the same time with a very different angle, like the Diggers or the Yippies. And then we can keep kind of rolling back the clock and look at situationists and, you know, on back and on back. I mean, we also, I think both me and Andy were influenced fairly early on by the historical avant-garde, like the the Dadaists and the Surrealists, and then Jonathan Swift, satirist like that, and you know, on back through the writings of Rabelais, and all the way back to the Native American and other indigenous cultures, who always had these trickster characters whose job it was to mess with people in ways that, or in that case, I guess, mess with other animal spirits.
yeah.
in ways that made them question their reality and question power relationships.
Do you think, do you think you guys have sort of a similar appeal nowadays because of the stunts that you pull as, like, the sort of Tom Greens or the MTV Jackass ilk people that, you know, that sort of pretend that pull stunts in order to gain, like, sort of a media spectacle? And I know that you guys have a much different agenda than they do. It's not just for laughs. It's actually to bring these issues to the forefront of consciousness.
Right. No, I mean, that's definitely, yeah, we see ourselves as part of the, part of that. I mean, you know, I mean, we see ourselves maybe a little closer to something like Ali G, or I don't know if you know Chris Morris in the UK. I don't know, but, you know, Candid Camera, you know, before that, and even people like Ernie Kovacs did very weird things with television that I think were inspirational in that way. The thing is, like, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people enjoy a prank. They enjoy mischief. They enjoy the sort of mystery and the unexpected. I mean, and there's a standard, like, elements of storytelling as well, standard elements of developing drama. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we enjoy that too, and we just would rather tell stories that have a political message. And, you know, I really like Jackass, or I did like Jackass in the beginning, you know, and if those guys could have turned their considerable talents for mischief to some kind of political ends, I think it would have been great.
So sort of along those lines, do you think the Yes Men will ever be sort of recognized as, like, superstars in you know, by the media and by the people that you're trying to fool, and then not be able to pull these stunts, like what happened to Tom Green and what happened to Jackass after they, you know, achieved this level of, you know, they put out a movie and they've had a hit TV show and they did the talk show circuit, you know, it sort of destroyed their ability to pull pranks in a way?
Well, it doesn't seem like we have a danger of that happening in the United States. I mean, even after our movie came out, it wasn't like people were recognizing us anywhere. So it wasn't, I don't think it was a problem. We had one case where somebody recognized us, you know. It might be a bigger deal in Europe because it seems like there's, right, and the movie isn't out here yet, and there's already been a lot more attention paid to it, it seems, than there was in the U.S. So it might be a little trickier here. That's all.
And I know that part of the plan of the Yes Men is to try to get enough people on board so that there are
that is the other thing, is that it doesn't matter if we're recognized, because if it seems like it's too big a risk, then we just put somebody else in to do the job, which would be great.
What would you say to a criticism of the Yes Men that that, like, these satirical pranks aren't really giving anyone the solution to the problems that you're trying to bring to the forefront?
Well, I mean, most of the time they're not. I would say you're right, they aren't. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of groups that are doing that and are working toward solutions. And we have used the sort of solution as a tactic at times, like, for instance, with the WTO thing, after we had exhausted our efforts at satire, we ended up suggesting what we would do if we could about the WTO, which was to dissolve it, and found a new organization whose goals were to put trade in the service of people and the environment. And that was, you know, it was incredibly well received when we announced it. I mean, we announced it as the WTO, with the authority of the WTO, in front of an audience in Australia, an audience of international trade accountants. And, you know, they thought it was great because, you know, they know that the trade policies are unfair. You know, in that case, we not only suggested an alternative, at least for, you know, a little while, in the heads of the audience that was there, they thought that it existed, and they started working on it. And we did the same thing for this recent Dow Chemical hoax,
mm-hmm.
where we got on the BBC and as Dow Chemical announced a solution to the problem of the people who are still ill and dying and the contamination of the site of the Bhopal gas disaster. I mean, there we announced a simple, straightforward solution to the problem, which is that Dow would take responsibility and use the value of Union Carbide, which was $11 billion when they bought it, $11.6 billion. So we said $12 billion to help the victims and remediate the site. You know, and further, you know, we had other stipulations as well, like bringing the former CEO of Dow, Warren Anderson, to justice because he is a fugitive of the law.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's, you know, for that we did suggest an alternative. That's not to say that we're able to manifest alternatives. I think that, you know, there are many groups that are working toward that, and the improvements, unless there's revolution, are usually incremental. But they are being made, and we hope that our efforts can contribute to those by, you know, elevating public awareness of the issues and by creating more debate and discussion about them.
And you are listening to an interview with Mike Bonanno of The Yes Men, conducted by Media Geek producer Drew Tirico. And, of course, check out the Media Geek website at www.mediageek.org for the Media Geek blog, as well as the ability to download archive editions of the program in MP3 and Ogg Vorbis. If you miss it, you can still go back and get it. And there's a podcast if you're into the whole podcasting, and even through the iTunes Music Store or the new online podcasting application, Odeo. It's all there. All the information, MediaGeek.org. And now we return to our interview with Mike Bonanno of The Yes Men.
So do you think that your break from the usual satire with the Dow Chemical action, do you think is that a change in tactics that you think you're going to be trying to adopt for more of your future actions, or is it just sort of you used it to get
the
most?
Case by case, we'll evaluate what we think will be the most effective, and we'll take that approach. I mean, in this case, in the case of the Dow thing, we thought we could have just, we have two kind of approaches that we use. One is the sort of satire where we actually speak more honestly about the goals of a company than they would themselves. Like, so in that case, we would have gone out and as Dow Chemical explained that there was no way that we would ever pay for the victims of Bhopal, because the company itself doesn't care at all. All we care about is their bottom line.
Right.
And, you know, the victims can go do whatever, you know. So, like, you know, we would have made it very clear that the company was quite mean, as they are, and as they are by their very nature as a corporation. They're not allowed to really be anything else but an inhuman money-making machine. So, you know, we would have just made that clear, but instead we decided to announce that they were going to do the right thing because we wanted to, A, show that another world was possible, show that it, you know, if a few people changed their minds and, you know, if there was some parallel universe where we could go against the legal constructs of the corporation, they could fix the problem. And B, we wanted to make sure that they had to respond. We wanted Dow to say something on the day of the 20th anniversary, and that was the only sure way that they would have to require a retraction.
I see. Yeah.
There was no way they wouldn't have had to say anything if we had gone on the air and been mean, because we would have just reinforced their position.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, they may have said that wasn't a real spokesperson, but, you know, it wouldn't have required them to say anything, really.
That's true.
So we decided on that approach.
I see.
But, you know, next time we might make it funny again and go in the other direction.
Was one of your goals actually to lower their stock price, or was that just sort of an incidental bonus?
That was an incidental bonus, yeah. we didn't really expect. I mean, we weren't thinking so much about their stock price. We were just thinking about, you know, how, I mean, I would have hoped that in the parallel universe that we were trying to create, where another world is possible, their stock price would go up when they made that announcement, but people would just say, yes, they're finally doing the right thing. Let's all buy Dow stock because, you know, we want to make sure that they can, you know, follow through on this.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah, you know, I guess that was what we thought, given we were too naive.
I'm curious which media outlets you'd feel some conflict about lying to. I know you guys had mentioned that you said you would have rather have given this news to Fox than or ABC or CBS, but obviously none of them are covering it, so you had to give it to the BBC.
Right.
Is there somewhere where you draw the line? I mean, would you give it to NPR? Would you give it to PBS? Would you even give it to like Amy Goodman on Democracy Now in the hopes that maybe the AP would pick up on it or something? I mean,
No. We would have definitely drawn the line. We wouldn't have done Democracy Now.
Yeah.
I was going to say, no, we wouldn't have drawn the... We would have done nowhere, but then, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, Democracy Now! Wouldn't actually... The thing that mattered about the BBC is that BBC World Television, live, is something that is seen by millions and millions of people around the earth. I mean, it's just the most watched... I'm not sure. It's the most watched news program globally. I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah. And it's really quite good, too. It's worth pointing out.
Right. No, it's excellent. I mean, that's the reason they were covering Bhopal. Mm-hmm. They were actually the ones covering it. And, we could have decided that, the risk of injuring the reputation of the BBC was too great, but in the end, it's decided that, we didn't actually consider that it would damage them in a permanent kind of way, and I think time will show that it hasn't.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I know there are going to be some people of the more sort of that would say maybe, you've worked to harm the cause more than you've helped it. I mean,
we've heard a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, overwhelmingly, we've heard positive response, even from people working in Bhopal, lifelong, Bhopal activists have said that they, felt it was useful, overwhelmingly. But then there are, plenty of people who've also written in and said, that they thought it was really bad tactics or, kind of the wrong targets or something. And it's easy enough because it did get reported initially as, a hoax on the BBC and a hoax, perpetrated against the victims of the Bhopal gas disaster, when we meant it very much to be a hoax against Dow.
Yeah.
And we think that, of all the people out there, the victims of the Bhopal gas disaster have been suffering for 20 years with unrealized hopes. They continue to. And we hope that, by just forcing Dow to scramble around on that day, we'll at least have given them a moment to think about it.
Do you think that the media will start to narrow their coverage now? I mean, you burn the BBC about this. And I don't anticipate the BBC all of a sudden, turning into a Fox and saying, well, we're not going to cover liberal causes anymore, period. But do you think that the media will start to, if this movement does catch on, and I hope it will, do you think the media will start to narrow down what they're going to cover for fear of being hijacked by other yes men, either you or other people that choose to jump on the bandwagon?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in this case, and I certainly think it would be a leap for them to do that. I mean, in this case, they would have to be expecting, I guess, corporations to be sending in fake activists. I mean, the problem here is that, it wasn't that they invited an activist on television. The problem was that it was Dow Chemical Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how it could possibly undermine the legitimacy of activists.
Well, do you think, will the yes men have to work harder to impersonate Dow and Shell and Nike in the future?
Probably. I mean, I think that for the next few months, it'll be harder. The thing is, like, the forces of commerce that are causing these media companies to do shoddy journalism, and when I say the forces of commerce, I mean, their continual drive to turn a profit, which is causing them to, keep these skeleton journalist staffs, this really just understaffed newsrooms, where people don't simply can't have the time to check out every source because they have to produce a story every day, sometimes more, is going to cause more things like this to happen. I mean, unless they, like, suddenly, you know, funded writers and researchers and people are putting together television news much better, the same kinds of errors will happen in the future, and more will happen as they continue to make a buck, continue to try to get more profit margin out of it. And, I think the BBC actually is suffering, too, because they've had a number of cutbacks in recent years. You know, the director of the BBC has been struggling to keep the news stations funded.
Yeah.
Struggling unsuccessfully, I might add, along with all the pressure in the UK to privatize everything, and it comes pretty much directly from the top. You know, that's one of the side effects, I think.
Well, do you think this is going to leave an opening for more independent media outlets to sort of fill that void as the journalist budgets are being slashed? Are the journalists going to have to start moving to more independent outlets? And what's your affiliate? I think I probably know how you feel about indie media and other independent media outlets, but what's your affiliation with them?
You know, I think that as far as journalism goes and journalists go, obviously they need jobs. These people are employed doing this work, so I don't know, you know, how much alternative they have to, you know, let's say move to smaller media, you know, or move to other areas. But I mean, you know, we're big fans of things like indie media and all kinds of other, you know, sort of guerrilla media initiatives that have cropped up to tell news where it's not being told, and to set up communication networks that are, you know, free of the, I guess, those binding ties of corporate commerce.
Yeah. How do you decide what issues that you guys tackle? I mean, I'm sure you guys all have your own sort of causes that you've been working on and that you follow. How do you decide which one to put all your efforts into? Is it something you feel like you can just leverage, or is it something you feel, is it more based on current events?
It's really based on current events and on emerging conditions, I guess, you know. Something happens and we generally try to respond to it rather than, you know, occasionally we do identify an issue that we want to deal with and be a little more proactive about it, but I'd say more of the time our methods are reactive.
Yeah. Well, Paul passed me a question here. How can someone join the Yes Men?
Well, one thing you could do is, after you've done your own identity corrections, you could submit a report of identity correction on the Yes Men website, and we'll post it. So that's, you know, one thing. There's also, on our website, there is a thing that says join, and that's basically joining our mailing list, but if we have opportunities that come up in your area, what we do is we send a... we send an email. The database, when you sign up, has different fields that you can fill in if you want to, like where you're located, skills you might have, you know, things like that, so that if something comes up and it seems like we should find somebody local to do it, we write to the people in the database in that area and see who's available. So that's another way.
So you guys are sort of building a network, you think, of people?
Yeah,
you can
definitely
depend
on a network of interested people. I don't know. So far, you know, it hasn't been hugely useful in getting things done, but we always hope that we'll be able to, you know, sort of activate the network in a more direct kind of way.
One last question for you. Will a Yes Man ever be president?
Isn't there one in the office now? I mean, the only problem is, you know, we in the Yes Men always swear that we won't, or I should say, you know, part of our charter is to not hurt people physically.
Mm-hmm.
And that does, so I guess that rules out this current one. Otherwise, it would seem like he's such a joke that one might suspect that he was engaging in some kind of satire. But unfortunately, it's just a bit too sick to actually be satire.
Oh, unfortunately, I agree with you. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mike, for talking to us.
And that was Media Geek producer Drew Tirico interviewing Mike Bonanno of The Yes Men. That interview originally aired on December 24th of last year. We liked it so much, we brought it to you again. That brings us to the close of another edition of Media Geek. Media Geek's producer is Drew Tirico, and I'm Paul Riesmandel. The Media Geek radio show is free to rebroadcast by non-commercial stations for non-profit purposes. Please contact us for permission to excerpt. Email me at paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.